welcome to the 200th episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am your host, Eternal Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
200 episodes of doing this podcast. Like, how much the time has passed since then? Holy moly.
That's actually a really good question. I'll look that up in a minute. And also here, of course, is Delius Tyler.
It's hard to believe that before when we started this podcast, the Switch was still the mythical NX.
We started
the very end of the Wii U era, right? We started the year
like
5 months before Switch launched.
Something like that. I'm literally looking it up right now.
Yeah, so like I still remember, like, we still had the Wii U system, and when the whole Miiverse was still popular, even back when we were still talking about like Xenoblade Chronicles X and how it's like Nintendo Land back then. Is just, yeah, holy moly, it's been, we cross over a generation to this point. It's like, wow, in perspective.
But yes,
and Nintendo really delivered. I feel like for like 2020, obviously terrible year for everybody pretty much the whole time, but this past week has been a good week for Switch. Like, they are honoring our 200th episode with one of the best weeks in recent memory.
In what context?
3D All-Stars comes out, and Hades released.
That wasn't bad.
That game's phenomenal. Kirby Fighters 2 was announced.
That
was actual like stuff.
That was weird.
Yeah, people like it. It's apparently pretty good. I might get it. It's $20.
Ugh. And of course, the Smash Brothers rumor, which is going around.
Yes, Smash Bros.
Yeah.
All right, are you guys ready to feel old?
Okay. All right,
we started this podcast on... Actually, hold on. Okay. I had to make sure I read it right. Yes, we started this podcast on October 1st, 2016.
4 years since then?
Yeah, we are almost at our 4 year anniversary.
Holy moly.
Oh no, next week's our 4 year anniversary. It's my mom's 60th birthday. Well,
oh, yeah, that.
That's awkward.
Oh no, this is actually kind of hilarious. Like I said, we started on October 1st, and next week is October 1st. So we are perfectly on our 4 year rotation. That's pretty cool. And for all of you math nerds out there who I totally know are listening, obviously. Yes, we did not perfectly line up with 4 years of shows. We had to skip some sometimes, like for holidays and for personal reasons. But overall, we've done pretty well to make it 200 episodes in 4 years. So give us a break.
Yeah, I think that means we've missed 16 episodes thereabouts.
Well, there's 52 weeks in a year.
Oh, wait, I gave us to 8 episodes. So
yeah,
more
so it'd be 208 if we had it perfectly on next week. So we were about 8 or 9 episodes off, give or take. So it's fine. But yes, we are most grateful to you, our loyal fan base, who have been with us either since the beginning or for a long time. You know who you are, especially those who comment on us a lot on Twitter. We are very, very grateful.
I just want to also recall as well, remember the time when Tyler had actually a fan club, quote unquote, on Reddit last I checked? Back in the conversation back in the day?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was a long time ago.
Since then I've become a polarizing figure.
Clearly. I mean, you can only blame yourself because you're a Philadelphia 76ers love, but you know.
Yeah, not anymore. If they trade Embiid, I swear I'm out. I swear I'm done. I'm done.
Okay, so you heard it here, folks. He does not trust the process. So
not anymore. The process is they murdered it. They killed it in its infancy.
Anyway, but we are very grateful. We've had a lot of fun these last 4 years. We've had a thanks to our extended family, who sadly could not be here tonight, King Koopa Keith, Krom Show, and Andros Alex, and Captain Toad Taylor,
Kremlin Kevin, what a great man.
Yeah, so, and all the rest who have joined us over the years, we are very, very grateful. We miss a lot of you, some of you not so much, because you sat with Tyler. I'm not judging, yes I am. and so, I love all the co-hosts.
Somebody had to found my fan club, I mean, come on.
Anyway, but yes, we hope to do as many more as possible, especially as we get out of this absolutely horrible year. I'm not even saying that as a Nintendo thing, but like in general, 2020 has not been kind to all of us here, and we look forward to 2021, where apparently things are going to get better. So, but for now, we are celebrating our bicentennial, And we're going to do it like we did a few episodes back and on most of our anniversary episodes, where we're just going to have some fun. So we're not doing news. We're not doing what have you been playing. We're just going to have some fun. We got some really interesting topics to do. And first up is my topic that I wanted to do. Nintendo fans really love debating about, you know, great characters and all that. But there are some questions that honestly haven't been answered in a grand sense. And one of them is who would actually win in a fight, which, yes, I know is the concept of Smash Brothers, but that's player input, not actual facts. And as we've noted multiple times on the show, me and also Will are a big fan of Death Battle from Rooster Teeth. And they've done some Nintendo versus Nintendo matchups in the past, like Peach versus Zelda and DDD versus Wario. But one they haven't done yet, what I really want to talk about, is the Battle of the Beastly Behemoths, DK versus Bowser. Yeah, so we're gonna do our own version of this and debate who would win. So it's time for a Nintendo Death Battle!
Donkey Kong versus Bowser!
Alright, so I did not come into this. I usually, actually host a YouTube show called Todd Talk where I debate Death Battle topics. So usually I come into a thing like this with preparation. But I honestly didn't this time because I wanted to have a little more fun with it. So when I think about DK versus Bowser, there is no doubt that they are absolute powerhouses. I mean, DK literally punched a moon.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you recall all his adventures from the games, yes. It just, like, it's absolutely crazy to the point.
Yeah.
He's, like, smashing moons and smashing, like, glaciers. Yeah.
And then, but then again, you can't discount Bowser because he's actually been in a black hole twice. He's been melted alive multiple times and still survived by the dry bones Bowser. And he has obviously kept coming back after numerous beatdowns. And unlike a certain Dark Lord from Legend of Zelda, there's only one Bowser. This isn't a reincarnation kind of thing. Bowser just keeps coming back. It's kind of freaky when you really think about it. But he is a behemoth, and yet so is Donkey Kong. So how do you determine the greatness of these two monsters of Nintendo? It's really, really hard.
It really is, like, when you in the grand scheme of things, because again, DK was the original bad guy at the origin of Nintendo with the Donkey Kong arcade machine. It's just, yeah, even way back when, and of course now, like, comparing the power specs to Donkey Kong, like, he is, like, endurance, if anything else. Of course, naturally, he can match King K. Rool with going to his punches. Like, again, if you remember, it caused enough to cause shockwaves back in that Smash Bros. Review trailer, if you recall correctly. So, and of course, naturally, Donkey Kong has his arsenal with the coconut gun, and of course, with powers, invincibility, and all of that. So, like, there's a lot of things to consider, especially within this repertoire. Of course, naturally, if you mess with Donkey Kong's bananas, obviously you're gonna get his full banana slam of fury, if anything else. It's quite, definitely an interesting thing to think about. And of course, like, with his, like, current recent game of, like, Tropical Freeze, it's just, yeah, like, he can do a lot, even to the point of just doing JoJo punches. And because we've seen him, his final smash, he just basically does JoJo punches. So, and then, like, taking comparison to Bowser, again, as I said, he survived black holes, he got melted alive, he pretty much gone through so much through the ringer, and he still comes back. And all this, he's still a father of, like, how many children? 7 children? I don't know, I forgot all of the Koopa kids. It's just, like, yeah. And of course, naturally, he has just a legion of army just to go, like, basically sick on Donkey Kong. But again, Donkey Kong is no slouch. He can take on armies, literally. So, it's the... I wonder how you can, like, really compare to it. Because, again, Bowser has an army, but DK is literally the bloody Hulk, Nintendo's Hulk. So how do you compare to that? I mean, what do you guys think? Yeah,
I don't know. I'm interested in what Tyler thinks, because he's really our DK fanboy over there. Even though he prefers Diddy by his own admission.
Yes, Diddy is the best Kong. If this was D versus Bowser, it's not close. It's Diddy Kong. But... Donkey Kong, I would like to pick Donkey Kong. He has some sweet power-ups in Donkey Kong 64. We have to talk about his ability to just straight up go invincible with the Strong Kong power-up. He can use the... but runs on crystal coconuts, so it's not an endless supply. Coconut gun is going to be an issue for Bowser. At the same time, Bowser's just, he's so durable. And DK punching the moon was definitely impressive. Not as impressive as surviving falling into a black hole twice. So it's difficult for me to say. I'm leaning Bowser in this one.
Right. Again, like the fact, like the force of a black hole pull and just surviving from that, again, from Super Galaxy 1 and 2, is just like, yeah, no one basically lives through a black hole. We have no idea what even happens to if one person lives a black hole. It's still speculation. And yet Bowser managed to go and survive those feats. Like, that's already a big endurance boost right there. And again, yeah, punching the moon perhaps is like equal to that tone, but I don't know if that you can really compare to the force of being basically sucked into a black hole and managed to lift the tail. So yeah. That's kind of like the major.
And it's important to remember the punching the moon thing. The moon like lands on top of the volcano. It fits nicely over the volcano. It's not like a moon. You know, like it's a moon, but like, you know, it's not like it. It's like the Death Egg or anything like that.
Like
it's more like a meteor than a moon.
Actually, hold on. Actually, it was when Death Battle did Donkey Kong versus Knuckles, they estimated the size of the moon, and they made sure to note that it was a moon in the Mario universe, not our universe. So it was a rather large moon, but is not equivalent to our moon. I think they said it was like less than half, so it's still impressive that he knocked it out of the freaking sky. But also, it crash landed into the island and or into the Tiki God, and like the island was fine. So clearly, there was some wacky physics going on there. So for me, the big question is, how do you kill each other? Bowser, as we've noted, is so incredibly durable that he's withstood a lot, and the only time Death Battle had to calculate his death his kill ability versus Ganon when they put those two against each other, and they revealed that the only way Bowser can die is when he's in dry Bowser form, and if you have enough force to literally shatter the bones, which Mario did once because Mario is way stronger than you think, and which is why he beat Sonic, Tyler, in case you didn't know. And
that was just a stupid, you know.
No, it wasn't.
Death Battle had an agenda to push. I understand it.
Oh, you wish. You wish. See, no. Dang it. Breaking kayfabe. Sonic won the first time because they included Archie Sonic and they only did certain calculations. Then when they made it just about the game's versions of Mario and Sonic, Mario won handily. So, yeah. No agenda there. Just the truth.
Completely poorly done Death Battle, but that's carry on.
Anyway, so the question here is that, you know, can Donkey Kong get Bowser in the dry Bowser form? And the answer is no, because the only way to do that is to melt his skin off, which Donkey Kong can't do, to our knowledge, we pray. So meanwhile, Donkey Kong, as great as he is, he's...
Well, I wouldn't say that, right? Donkey Kong, he is... He's powerful, so he,
yeah.
And he's probably outsmarts Bowser. He could easily throw him like Mario does. In Mario Party 2, deep cut here, if Donkey Kong becomes a superstar in the final level, he can hurl Metal Bowser, who's 10 times heavier than regular Bowser. So he could give him a wahoo into the lava.
But again, where's the lava?
Oh, there could be some lava. We got to talk about the setting. Are we
well,
in an arena?
We got to have an objective setting. So it would either be in the Mario Kingdom or on DK Island, which, yes, I know has a volcano. But
yeah, there's lava in both of those.
In certain areas of the Mushroom Kingdom, yes. And on
and
DK
they could just throw, you know, we could just like lure him there. Donkey Kong's pretty crafty. Let's not underestimate his craftiness.
He only cares about bananas. I mean, that's really his thing. He's not a genius at all. He's lazy. He is freaking lazy.
Right.
No, Donkey Kong.
If you call it a cartoon, that horrible CG cartoon back in the day.
Not canon. Hashtag like, not canon.
Hashtag not canon. Hashtag not my Donkey Kong.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, that he's not really the most smartest banana of the bunch, no pun intended. Is just...
Well, no, because Diddy's, you know, Diddy's there, and he's obviously better in every way. We've already been through this, but...
Yeah.
Donkey Kong still, though, the character in recent games, my older brother loves Donkey Kong and he points this out, and I think he makes a great point. Donkey Kong has gone from like this kind of like strong, proud monkey into a little bit more of like just like a beast, you know, like in Mario Kart when you select him, he's like, Goo-hee! instead of like his old chest beat, you know, like they have changed Donkey Kong's characterization over the years, but originally he's not a dummy, that's for sure. He's fairly intelligent in 64, you know, he's capable of complex thoughts.
Yeah, but again, it takes a lot to get him riled, and the biggest thing to get him riled is the banana horde. He lives for that banana horde.
He does.
Yeah, and even though you don't want to count the DK cartoon, which was totally horrible, as canon, you know, it shows that DK really only cares about bananas, even when, you know, there's things he could do to get more bananas. He's like, nah, I'll just take the easy banana versus the bananas gotten later. You know,
have you eaten bananas before, Todd? They are delicious.
Is that a trick question?
Bananas are amazing. Who could blame him?
Well, I'm not saying that's not the point. Okay. I love like blueberries. All right, but I will not be like a guy that only eats blueberries. Nor will I only get riled up when I know that my mom has made a blueberry cake. You know,
well,
she'll make other
really
things for
like
me. I'm like, oh, of course, mother. I will eat all these other things that you have made for me because I am lazy and don't want to cook. But I'm not going to just get riled. I was like, oh, hey, Todd, I got some pizza for you. Nah, it's not blueberries. It's like, I made your enchilada meal. Nah, that's not blueberries. You know, it's like, that's DK. You can offer him anything else, but if he doesn't want the bananas, if he doesn't get bananas in that sentence, he's not going to go anywhere.
No,
look at the Smash Brothers trailer. There's another example. He's just lazing around his home, and then random things started happening, and only when he, like, gets shaken from his spot, he's like, okay, I probably should check this out. It's like, really? You couldn't have done that beforehand? So.
In his defense, who would have expected King K. Rool to return after all these years?
True. Or Banjo-Kazooie to show up outside his door randomly. How did they even find the island? Like, do we even know where DK Island is on a map?
How did
Banjo get there?
The Ginginator. Probably using the Ginginator.
Probably.
Ginginator, yeah, he's not really a transport item, but you know, they're rare buddies from back in the day.
Are you saying that they're a rare kind of friend?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Anyway, but, so my problem here is that, you know, okay, Bowser's, you know, kind of an idiot himself. He consistently falls into his own traps. He really doesn't get that he's never gonna get Princess Peach, and he just keeps trying, which you could say is, you know, an endurance thing, because he's like, I will find a way to make this work, as we saw, of course, in Mario Odyssey, where he went full tilt and just said, let's just screw it and get to the wedding. Which we forget, Bowser is a wonderful wedding planner.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. If it was about wedding planning, I'd probably go with Bowser, although I think Donkey Kong could probably throw a great bash.
He'd probably break the bash and everything else. But think about it, all the food would be banana themed. I mean, Bowser
again, bananas are delicious.
And that's fine, but I don't want it as every meal at my wedding, all right? And Bowser, he got the suit.
And don't come to Donkey Kong's.
He got the ring. He got the soda juice. He got the perfect soup. He got the cake. He got everything. Bowser is an excellent wedding planner. # Bowser wedding planning service. So Bowser, yeah, he's an idiot, but I think he's definitely smarter than DK. And
I would see, that's my thing. That's my problem with every death battle, right? Because Bowser's intelligence varies so greatly.
It's true.
Throughout the games. Like, sometimes he's, like, crazy smart. Other times he's an idiot. And it's just, like, in the Mario RPG series, there's one version of Bowser. And then in the mainline series, there's another.
And Paper Mario is different.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, like, there's so many different levels of intelligence for Bowser. Like, Paper Mario, he's kind of classified as more of a dummy.
Yeah,
and
more or less.
I'd say Donkey Kong's probably got him outwitted in that case, but I think when it comes down to powers, Donkey Kong, obviously a beast, but I do just think Bowser hasn't beaten every way. I think Bowser's faster. You think he's stronger. I think DK might be smarter, arguably, but I just don't think he has the tools to really do the damage like that.
And we got to remember that most times that Donkey Kong is messing with somebody, it's usually someone that he can beat with brute force rather easily, like the Crocs and the Tikis and everything. Bowser is a literal killer. He has the razor sharp claws. He's got the spike shell. He's got, you know, incredible acrobatic abilities, as we've seen in Galaxy and other things. And he's got the fire breath, which is not something that DK is used to fighting. And so he could be impaled, clawed to death, burned alive. It's not exactly if it's just raw power, I'm sure they would be an excellent contest, but Bowser will fight dirty.
Yeah, even in raw power, I think I'd still go with Bowser.
Right. I mean, the only thing I could probably imagine in Donkey Kong's arsenal is the orange grenades. That's the only thing that probably equals to explosive, quote unquote. But
yeah,
that's really nothing much to
again. Like TNT barrels he uses in his games. I don't know if like that even would really count. But if it was, you know, if they had like a tools that they use, you know, that would be something that he could take advantage of. But at the end of the day, I just don't think that's enough. I mean, Mario's blasted Bowser with far more fearsome items and not being able
and again,
to strike
black
the final
hole.
Blow.
Like a black hole, you know, is like that. Like that's like the end thing. Is like, can DK he survived the black hole? Can DK top a black hole? No. Again, if he somehow got him into the dry Bowser form, there is no doubt in my mind that he could use his, you know, his super-powered punch, which again knocked a moon out of the sky, to kill him. But how does he get him into dry Bowser form? Mario couldn't do it without the help of some super lava from within Bowser's own castle. So if Mario can't do it, and Mario definitely is stronger than DK.
Well, DK's more powerful than Mario.
Yeah, not really.
I mean, go back to the original Donkey Kong game. Mario can't touch Donkey Kong.
But
he just bounces off him and dies.
But that's not Mario. That's Jumpman.
That is Mario. Mario and Jumpman are the same character.
Ugh, it's not. Also, That's not the actual DK. That's the original DK. The one we're dealing with is technically the third generation.
I think in Nintendo's official canon, it's Cranky Kong.
Yes,
yeah, Cranky Kong
is the
Cranky
original.
Kong.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even Cranky acknowledges that Donkey is on a similar level, and Cranky's obviously arrogant. So I think we can assume that Donkey Kong has probably surpassed Cranky Kong in strength.
Yeah, we'll have to debate that another time. But to end this,
the Mario versus Donkey Kong. That's actually our Donkey Kong.
That one is canon. That one is canon. So. But do we all agree that we're picking Bowser on this one?
Oh yeah, we're going.
Yeah,
Bowser
right. seems to be the lucky pick. Is
all right. Well,
I don't want to do it, but I gotta do it.
Don't worry, we'll do a Diddy contest next time, and then you can rake off all of his great feats. So
just there's that's endless. It's endless.
Diddy versus Bowser Jr. There you go. Offspring rematch. Vengeance. So, hey, in Death Battle, if you wanna, you know, do this one, I fully encourage it. I mean, I didn't expect you to do Wario versus DDD, and that one was a blast, pun intended. So,
who won that one?
DDD totally won that one.
Landslide DDD, I would think.
Not landslide, but it
was
good.
Wario is very resilient, that's true.
Wario's got more techniques than you think. I mean, he was clearly made to be the anti-Mario, so he has a lot of Mario-style abilities, but he literally, Wario went for his ultimate fart attack, and DDD pulled out a Gordo and stuck it where the sun don't shine, and Wario blew up.
Literally.
Seriously, I will send you the link to that fight, Tyler. You have got to see it. It is one of the most hilarious things ever. So, yeah. But, yes, so Bowser is our winner as chosen by us, we three kings of Nintendo attire. If you think that Donkey Kong actually has Bowser to beat, let us know. We would love to hear your thoughts on this. So, now, moving on to a kind of a more recent topic, Super Mario 3D All-Stars. So when we were Tyler's got the game, Will's got the game. I probably will get it for Christmas, or sorry, for my birthday in a month or so. But a lot of people have been playing it, and honestly, a lot of people have been enjoying it. But there is one thing that stands out: Super Mario Sunshine. If you don't recall, this has been kind of what's a nice way of putting it: the dark horse.
Yes,
Black sheep, like that. The black sheep of the Mario franchise. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't the best, and it certainly wasn't 64, Galaxy, or Odyssey, or Paper Mario. And so we were like, it doesn't really deserve this hate. And then the 3D version came out, or sorry, the All-Stars version came out, and a very poignant answer came through. So we're going to break this all down in a Nintendo discussion.
Thank you.
Will, this is your topic, so take it away.
So yes, the reason I brought this topic back up again is because it has been kind of the ongoing debate within the Mario community all these years, ever since it has been released back in the original 2007, if I recall correctly. And yeah,
2002 even, for Mario Sunshine.
Yeah, even back then, like when it released, initially released it on GameCube, many just, one thing, it just felt so different, the fact that now Mario has been limited to using, like, just using Flood. Doesn't have the usual kick punch moves back in the original Mario 64. And of course, naturally, those void space platformer levels, which one, they take away Flood off you, so it's just pure platformer. And after that, it's just like feels so alien, if anything else. Like, it just, it wasn't the same Super Mario 64 formula that we all grew up back then. And but somehow, it just feels so strange, if anything else. Because one, obviously, like those kind of sky levels, especially one that the one infamous Sandbird, which either you love or hate, and of course, naturally, like those
who big, loves the Sandbird. Levels. Does anybody love the Sandbird? It's brutal.
It is one of the most like anxiety driven levels, if anything else. Like, okay, I gotta make sure. Okay, and of course, you only have so much Flood water to help you hover, which like. Okay, that's even bad, the fact. And like, okay, make sure don't fall off. And then like, oh, no. And of course, naturally, there's also the other levels, like the one, of course, the infamous, let's see, one's, we're going to that long river, poison river, I like to call it,
no.
With the one leaf.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing, you can't crash into the sides or else your lily pad boat will just sink. And of course, naturally, the one infamous pachinko machine, which that is probably the one of the most unusual levels in Mario history. Like, they put a pachinko machine and is like, I remember back then with the GameCube levels, like, even like when you try to like use the Flood machine, because normally you're supposed to use the rocket to break through it, but if you can match just switch to Flood, then you have no problems with it. But yeah, I just still remember like the pachinko machine, the jumping mechanics, you get stuck in certain places. Like, there's a lot of things that like was very glitchy with that certain level. I mean, that's just one part of it. And of course, naturally, like, other different designs, well, one, I think it's like, yeah, definitely one was the blue coins, just how it's like so radically different. It's just like, it was so unusual, the space levels, of course, naturally, with the whole, Shadow Mario, of course, with Bowser Jr.'s storyline, being the first introduced to it. It's just, it was so weird. But now the years have gone by, and now much more people have played it. It kind of brings that up the question again now. Like, does Super Mario Sunshine deserve being shunned as it is before, but or has it reclaimed redeemed itself now? Now it has with this new current fan base, or which has been spoiled by the current generation of games, like with Odyssey or with Galaxy games. So that's kind of one thing I want to talk about is like. Now that we have kind of been, we've aged, we grew up, we kind of got a bit more wiser, do you think that this game has deserved the shunning, the boot that has deserved all these years ago?
So, this was the first game that I played on 3D All-Stars for pretty much all the reasons that you had mentioned. I was genuinely, growing up, I liked Sunshine a lot. I loved it as a kid when it came out, so it was one of my favorite games. I think I was 8 when it launched. But somewhere along the way, somewhere within the last 10 years, I just started thinking, no, Sunshine was bad. You know, and I don't know why I started thinking that. It just, like, I think it must have just been internet discourse. At some point, I heard Sunshine was bad enough, and I started thinking, yeah, no, Sunshine wasn't a good game. I got 100 and, all 120 shines on my recent playthrough in 3D All-Stars, and the answer is that it's a mixed bag. I think people are generally are pretty correct on their overall opinion of Sunshine. The game, when I started playing it again, I was like, wow, I can't believe I let people convince me that this game wasn't good. It starts out phenomenally. It has an actual story, which is, I think, a good thing. I really like Bowser Jr. in this game. I think it's definitely the high watermark for him, and I'd wish they'd actually kind of go back to use him more like they did in this game with Shadow Mario. The Flood mechanics work great initially. The first two nozzles, the spray and the hover nozzle. Hover nozzle is phenomenal to control. The level designs, the world, Isle Delfino, such a great hub world. Everything is a blast. But then you start to get further into it, and some of its flaws start to kind of shine through. I think it's one of the lesser known flaws. When you think about this game and the flaws, you think about the controls, you think about the camera, you think about the glitches. And yes, this game is way more glitchy than a normal Mario game. There are some things that are really, really annoying, like trying to use the rocket nozzle and just having it like not take off. Like if you're jumping and you touch the ground right before it launches, it won't shoot you back up. There's no physical reason for that. I think it's a glitch. I put a video of myself getting killed on this chain chomp level where you have to drag a chain chomp into a pool. And like it just like the chain, like I was holding backwards the entire time. The chain just yanked me in under the chomp, smashed and died. It was like just a total bug. And I saw a lot of people posting that actually. So it's definitely a common glitch, but those moments are few and far between. The biggest problem with Sunshine is a lack of level diversity and I think a rushed development. It's been said that the game was rushed, but you don't notice that anywhere more than in the fact that there are only 7 stages, 8 total stages. And that's what kills this game. Mario 64 is, I just think, a strictly better title because it's more diverse environment that you explore and that the missions that you can do, and it's more open-ended. Sunshine is linear in what order you can do things. But the first level is really good. Rico, what's it called? I can't remember what it's called. Something about planes.
Bianco Hills.
Thank you. Bianco Hills. Yeah, Bianco Hills is a good level. Rico Harbor is fine. There's some really frustrating missions in there, but the level design itself is good. The Peanut Park is a blast, phenomenal level. That's my favorite level in the game. I think that's such a, just every mission in there is fun, and it's so cool to explore using flow to navigate the level in really creative ways. But the Sirena Beach is not a very good level. You're in a hotel for night. It's just really tight. Mario needs to be able to explore. That's the thing with a great Mario game. You need that freedom of movement. And when they put you in a tight that, it just doesn't quite do it. The Pianta Village is similar, not in the tight space area, but it's not a very fun level. It's just an area. It's called Pianta Village. You'd expect there to be like, you know, cool looking huts everywhere, and like that. I think you can kind of tell where Piantas are supposed to live, but it doesn't look like a Pianta. It doesn't look like a village.
It's just the fact that like, the village itself is on the top of a giant hole, which is like. There's just a giant tree on top of a giant hole. Like, can you really call that? Unless, like, I don't know, if you're like making a treetop kind of village like that. Like, I don't think that we call that a quote-unquote village. I mean, the fact that it only has the main thing is a hot spring and an underground scaffolding. I don't know. That thing it really tripped me up when I was a kid. Yeah,
I agree. It is a weird level in that way too. It doesn't do enough for you. You know, it almost feels like a first level on last level. There's some problems there. That's 25% of the game right there is those two. Wiki Bay is fine, but it's not a ton of fun 100%. I think the missions on there are really good.
Noki Bay, like the only thing that, I don't know, I still remember like actually doing clean that giant eel in that area. Like, that's kind of the one of the main levels that actually makes me kind of, I don't know. I was like, when I was a kid, I remember like I was kind of freaking out a little bit. Like, okay, I gotta watch my air, and I always gotta clean this giant eel's teeth. I was like, oh hey Molly, that kind of like was a little.
It's a cool mission. It's a really good mission for sure. It just doesn't. Those are what hold it back. Otherwise, it would be an absolute blast. And that's true for so many of the missions in this game. The first half, like every stage's first three levels, are pretty dang fun, and they kind of start to throw those. Like they start to. Mario is too jittery in the game, and when they start to ask you to do precise platforming like they do, it becomes really frustrating because just a tiny click of the stick and Mario's running off a cliff, and that definitely gets revealed in some of those floodless levels, which I actually love. I think those are the high point of the game. Mostly there's one that's very memeable where the Piantas chuck you back and forth, and they keep saying I'm a chuckster, very funny. But it's a horrible level. It just doesn't control well, and it's just not fine. But that's the thing with Sunshine. stages. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, it's not diverse enough in terms of gameplay, in terms of what's on the mission variety. There's a lot of, they do some cool things, and Flood is definitely a lot of fun. But overall, the first half of the game is great, 100% just torture. At the end, you're just like, man, these are no longer fun.
Right, right. And let's not forget about the dreaded mud boat. Let's not forget about
that. Oh, the, my God. Yeah, we can't forget the absolute worst. I mean, I was trying to get all the blue coins on Corona Mountain. The mud boat, it randomly goes. It goes in any direction. Like, in the very beginning, it's calibrated correctly, where if you spray to the left, it'll turn to the right, and then vice versa. But in the, or maybe it's the other way around, I can't remember. But as soon as you let go of the spray, just it will turn whatever way. It will just turn whatever way. It's infuriating. And there's 9 blue coins you have to get, like, around this circle and on these tight little turns. The mud boat just doesn't control that well. It's a rare Mario game that lacks the Nintendo polish. And you have to give it for creativity, because it is such a creative game. It does a lot really, really well. But it stumbles hard down the stretch.
Yeah, if you're all wondering why I have barely said a word, it's because I never played this game.
You never played Sunshine?
I never got around. Well, here's the thing. Remember, at this point in my life, I had only just started to buy my own consoles. So when I got the GameCube, it was already pretty late into its run. And my first game was Luigi's Mansion, which was obviously a great choice. But because I was like buying my own games, and I could only ask for so much for birthday or Christmas, I could only get a certain amount of titles. And I, for whatever reason, had heard that Sunshine wasn't the best, so I steered away from that and got things like Paper Mario and Fire Emblem. And I didn't even get Smash Brothers, but that was because my cousins had it at their house, and I babysat them for a whole summer or two, so we just played that literally every single day. It was literally a part of our routine, so I was fine not having that one. But I got all these other games that I had heard interesting things about, and I just never got around to Sunshine. I played a demo for it at a Toys R Us, which shows you how long ago this was. But I played it at Toys R Us, and so I did the Petey Piranha boss fight, the one that they would eventually bring into Smash Brothers Brawl. And, you know, that was fun-ish. I didn't really care for Flood, but that was, I had only a limited amount of time with it. So I will be curious to see how it resonates with me when I more than likely get this game. But at present, I have not played it. I do know some dear friends who have, and one of them had, okay, I know you probably both have heard of this, but like apparently Nintendo didn't do the best job of like debugging this game, as you have talked about a little bit, but like there were like testing boxes that were shown throughout the game. And in one of my friend's cases of Vanessa, she got a shine, and it was like in the secret room area, so you know, a standard Mario fare. But when she got the shine, it, like, flipped her upside down, so she's hanging on the bottom of the room, just standing there, and, like, not falling. Like, she has a video of it on there, I'm sure someone can find it, but it's like, she's like, huh, that's weird. And like, yeah, that is kind of weird, because that, you think that'd be a thing that they would fix in this, you know, update, remaster, whatever you want to call it. So... I mean, I don't know what the real answer is, but I think what the real problem is timing. And here's what I mean by that. And we see this a lot with other Nintendo franchises, is that sometimes they'll take like a sidestep instead of a true leap forward. A great example would be Gens 4 and 5 of Pokemon, because they really didn't really innovate that much. And then when they did, it really wasn't that good. And Zelda has done this at times, like with Triforce Heroes. That was kind of like a sidestep instead of a true leap forward. And for Mario, you know, it had just come off of the high of Mario 64, which is, of course, one of the best games ever made, especially for that time. And then after that, after Sunshine, Nintendo went full tilt and made Galaxy, which obviously blows it out of the water. So right. It was in this uncomfortable situation of, I have to top one of the most important Mario games ever, and can I? And they like, okay, let's try and do something different, you know, like with Flood and the Shines and everything. And whether it's Rust or not, I don't know. I honestly don't know the backstory behind Sunshine, but
it was rushed. They needed to launch it for holiday. And,
okay. So, yeah, and I know that, hey, sometimes Nintendo's rushed games do work out. Look at Majora's Mask, that was literally made in a year. But
yeah,
that was a rare circumstance, and even by Zelda standards, that's a really short game, especially compared to Ocarina. But still, is it fair to say it's not as good as other Mario games? Absolutely. Is it fair to say it's a bad game? No, because it's just something different, and just because it's different doesn't mean it's bad. But when you stack it up against all the other great Mario games, it really fails in comparison, both in terms of, you know, innovation. Yes, Flood was there, but you notice they never really brought Flood back outside of Smash Brothers. And while some things did stick, other things really didn't. And that's just the way it goes. And like another great example of this, think about the original Super Mario Brothers. Okay? Think about how great that was. Think about Super Mario Brothers 3. Think about Super Mario World. Why does no one talk about Super Mario Brothers 2?
Like, because it was just a weird game that wasn't very
was
good.
Weird.
Exactly.
It was very weird.
And, then look at Zelda. The original Zelda was awesome. The Link to the Past was revolutionary. And yet, remember, there was Zelda 2 Link's Adventure, which was totally weird. And it was a side-scrolling adventure for whatever godforsaken reason. And then they realized that that didn't work. And they went and made a better game with Link to the Past. And sometimes that's just what happens in game design. They make a game that they feel like could work and could make Mario or any franchise different in its own special way. Doesn't really work out. And then they go, okay, let's rethink this on a grander scale. And then we usually get a better game more times than not. So Tyler said it best where, you know, there are problems. Absolutely. But there's also really great stuff in there if you're willing to look for it and play the game throughout. And again, he clearly likes the game. He got all the shines.
Yeah,
so,
no, it's a very good game. It definitely, it's, you know, it was one of the best platformers on the GameCube. As you said, you make a great point. It becomes a weird timing in the Mario, in the series' life. It comes out in between the most revolutionary time at that point, and then I think the best 3D platformer ever in Galaxy. So it's no wonder people don't remember it as fondly.
Yeah. Well.
I do have one more question about Sunshine, though, because this was something that occurred to me when I was playing it. I was 8 when Sunshine came out, right? Most of my favorite childhood games, my first memory period, is playing Sonic at my neighbor's house when I was like 3.
Obviously.
But then the rest of my childhood games, I love the N64 games. When I went through them, they're like unbelievably great. But most of the games I spent a ton of time on in my childhood were largely GameCube games.
Yeah.
It's weird to me that Mario Sunshine, for people like in our age group, I guess, Todd, you're 28, 29?
I'm 30. Thanks for making me feel old.
Well, you're 4 years older than me, so you're 12. The games of your childhood would be N64 games.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who thinks of Mario Sunshine as their childhood Mario, aside from my younger brother, was 5 when it released. Okay. It's a weird thing. What do you think makes us feel the connection? Like, why is, to me, Mario 64 is still the childhood Mario game, and I wonder why that is.
It's kind of like what I said before. It's about timing. Like, when you got it, you know, you resonated with 64. I will always resonate with Super Mario World, because I would play that on my babysitter Mona's SNES, because she had it for her kids, and me and Ashley, my sister, were babysat by her, so we would always be playing Mario. And we would play that, we would play All-Stars, we would play Kart, we'd play Aladdin, you know, but back when movie video games were actually good. And, yeah, you heard me, but, like, I will always have that connection with World, because World, to me, was awesome. It had Yoshi, it had the star levels, like, with words like Tubular and Bossa Nova.
Tubular was awesome.
I know, I used to say Tubular all the time. They're like, where'd you hear that word? Oh, it was in Mario World. So it was just like, that was it. And then, of course, when Paper Mario came out, I had that connection, too, because I thought that was just a really cool game. Galaxy was great, obviously. Galaxy 2 was just as fun, and I love Odyssey. But if you ask me, like, what's my favorite Mario game, it's probably going to be either Paper Mario Thousand Year Door or Super Mario World, because those two games just resonated with me for one reason or the other. One was because of age and timing. The other was because I was old enough to really appreciate the deep story and the characters. And for you, you probably just got to experience the grandness of the Super Mario, sorry, the Mario 64 game. Because
see, that's the thing. I didn't. I 64 when I was young, but Sunshine should be the one that I remember. Like that, I was like, when 64 came out, I was like, probably, what was I, 2. Remember the timing on when we got our N64. Maybe I was playing it when I was 4 and I have fond memories of it that way, but I remember things from when I was 8, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really remember things from when I was 4. That's well, the weird thing to me.
Yeah. Well,
for me, like, yeah, because I still remember back then when I actually had the original NES, and I still remember playing Duck Hunt and playing the original Mario Brothers when it first came out back in like early 1990s. And personally for me, I should be, like, resonate more with, like, back in the classic Mario games. Like, I still remember, again, like with Todd, I grew up with the SNES. I mean, I remember Star Fox. I remember the Super Mario World and, of course, Super Mario All-Stars, which had that compilation. And, yeah, I still remember playing a lot of the battle games. But as I said, like, I kind of definitely resonated more with SD4 because, again, like, that was kind of the full generation I grew up with. I still remember the commercials of Get In or Get Out back in the day. It's, like, and perhaps, like, that was the game that, like, I was introduced to, like, 3D World. Because, like, I was still practically sucked at games back when the SNES era. But when it came to, like, 64, I mean, again, I kicked butt in Mario Party. The original Mario Party. Blisters and all. And it's just, that was the thing that kind of like resonated more. Like I still remember the commercials like for Super Mario 64 when you face up against Bowser the first time and you spin his tail to those spike bombs. It's just that was the game that even though I actually didn't get N64 until much later, I still remember 64 as just one of the classic games.
I'll give you a great example. Like Ocarina of Time is by most people considered like the greatest game ever. Because of its impact on the massive 3D worlds and everything. I never beat that game until much later in my life. Because I would get so far and I would get to the Seven Sages part of Ganon's castle where you had to, you know, get them all free and all that. But I could never beat them. It was the light temple or sage area or whatever. And I didn't understand what I was supposed to do. And I tried everything that I thought I could do, and I forgot I had the Lens of Truth. And if I had used that, I would have advanced, but I couldn't. And then much later in my life, because of video game guides, I realized what I could do. So I was on an N64 binge, and I finally beat the game, and it was great. But for me, growing up, my Zeldas that I connected with where it was Majora's Mask was because I had a guide from my cousin that let me beat the game because I totally knew exactly where to go for all the fairies, for all the masks, and how to get everything so I could get the Fierce Deity mask at the end. And then I grew up with Oracle of Ages, which had Nehru, who was one of my first video game crushes because she had
and
blue
Sonic.
Hair. Stop it. Stop it. That's not, no. That wasn't you. That was someone else. But it's just weird how sometimes you connect with things and sometimes you realize, I should have connected. Like, I should have been one of those people saying, like, Ocarina of Time is the best ever. But I couldn't because I never beat it when I was a kid. It was always that game where I got stuck, and even though I really wanted to finish it, I never did it until I was an adult. So, that's just how it works sometimes.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess there really isn't any giant reason to it, you know? Wind Waker is definitely my childhood Zelda game, and Sonic Adventure 2 is my
Another great example. I liked Wind Waker. I wasn't really a big fan of the graphics at first, but I liked Wind Waker. I got stuck on the seafaring section where you had to like dig up the Triforce from the boat. I didn't understand what to do. That was another Zelda game that I didn't beat until later when I had the guide to help me. So, I've seen so many people say, "Oh, Wind Waker's so amazing. Good for you. I prefer Twilight Princess, or I prefer Oracle of Ages, or I prefer, you know, Majora's Mask, because I actually beat those ones." So, just how it goes.
Surprisingly, like, I actually managed to beat Wind Waker original, and I, like, even with the whole Triforce side quest deal. But yeah, it's just really kind of strange, like, especially with games you actually manage to play and finish in your life. That's the kind of thing that, you know, they could put that feather in your cap, while other games, like, you never play before or finish, it just seems like I have that less resonant memory within you. So I guess that's kind of the reason why, like especially with, like, now with the new generation, nobody's going to remember SD4 until now. Or, like, of course, back then when we were growing up, like, with Age of the Walkman and all that. But now with the new generation, it just kind of sees, like, what will be their childhood games in the future. I mean, it could be Odyssey, could be this compilation, who knows. So yeah, it is definitely a good question.
And, like, and that's
Mario
how...
Galaxy, man, that holds
Galaxy
up
was
so
great.
Well,
was,
we'll talk
was,
more about it next
great.
week, but that really is just like 64. It shows its age playing it back,
obviously,
first, where the camera is atrocious. Sunshine's camera gets all this crap. It's 64. If you're not going to criticize it, but criticize Sunshine's, you have nostalgia goggles on, because 64's camera is way worse than Sunshine's. But it's a masterpiece, and it holds up so well today. Galaxy, however, that game could release right now and it would win Game of the Year. It's the best game. It's so good. It's unbelievable how good Mario Galaxy is.
And again, they went full tilt after the somewhat lukewarm reaction of Sunshine. They're like, we've got to do better. And what do they make? Galaxy. And they're like, let's make more money. Galaxy 2! It's Prince Money! Oh, Nintendo. What are we going to do with you? Well, we're going to at least talk about you for at least another couple hundred episodes, but whatever. Alright, so if we're all done here, we are now going to move on to Tyler's topic, which is because of 3D All-Stars, which was another great idea of Nintendo. Tyler had the great idea of, let's make All-Star compilations of other Nintendo franchises. So we're going to talk about which ones, and then we're going to make our picks. So, gentlemen, let's be game makers. All right, Tyler, this is yours, so take it away.
Yeah, so I guess I'll ask you, because you're the you know, you're the how much time do we have? Should we each take one series, or should we discuss the four that I put in our chat?
We haven't even been doing an hour yet. So let's have some fun. Let's just do as many as we can.
Awesome.
I'll keep track of time.
Awesome. So as Todd introduced the idea, well, we're going to put together compilations of other Nintendo franchises, and let's just start with Zelda, probably the second biggest Nintendo franchise. Now, when I'm putting together these compilations, I'm trying to come up with ways to represent the series the best. You know,
okay.
Can I
pause really quick?
These...
I just want to say one. I want to make one quick caveat for our thing. There can be no games from the Switch, and if you must do Wii U, it has to be for a good reason.
Mm-mm-mm.
Okay,
yes.
And you can't say sales, but so, like, we can't put Breath of the Wild in this compilation because you can get Breath of the Wild right now. Or
good caveat.
If we did Mario, we couldn't do Odyssey because obviously you could get it right now, and so on and so forth. So continue.
Yes, very good caveat. So when I'm my thought process is, how can we best series? And you're right, Breath of the Wild will be in here 10 years from now, but at this point, it's not that way. There's going to be some patterns. You get together a compilation of Zelda, you have to have the original. You have to have A Link to the Past.
Agreed.
You have to have Ocarina of Time.
Obviously.
And you have to have Wind Waker.
That I don't know.
That would be my Zelda compilation. So you have the... I'm splitting it to two 2Ds, two 3Ds.
Yeah.
I want the Wind Waker because that shows the more creative side of the Zelda franchise. That when they said this franchise is more than just Nintendo's serious franchise, you know, there's some sort of whimsy in Wind Waker you really don't find in the other games. They're much more more grave than your average Nintendo game. The whole idea of commanding the winds is an off-the-wall idea. The navigating the seas is just a totally something that I would never thought of in a Zelda game, and it's something that they that I think Breath of the Wild was the first game since to really replicate that sense of wonder of what's going to come on the horizon. So I need Wind Waker in there. That's my thing. Ocarina of Time, I don't even need to explain.
No.
Probably the best game of all time. So that one's in there. And then A Link to the Past, I want the Super Nintendo, because I think A Link to the Past is a very important kind of bridge between the 3D era and then the old school Zelda games. A Link to the Past of establishing a narrative that really wasn't really possible on the NES. There's some story there. The exploration of the world map was really there. The original Zelda doesn't hold up that well. Playing it back today, you still need a guide to beat that game. A Link to the Past, you could do without a guide. A Link to the Past is holds up, and that's why those would be my those would be my four. How about you, Todd?
This is tough, okay? I mean, there are so many great Zelda games, and... Alright, well, I'm going to start with Link to the Past, because it was a very important title to the Zelda franchise. Again, it was what came after Zelda 2, so again, they started off great, went did a sidestep, realized they had to do better, make Link to the Past, it's a classic. And so you got to have that one. I feel for me, that's honestly one of the true beginnings of the franchise, because it was showing how grand it could be, how it could use the world to its massive advantage, and so on and so forth. I know I'm probably going to catch flack for this, but I was going to put Oracle of Ages in here because of my darling Nehru, and that game honestly was really good. But upon really further reflection, if I have to pick a real like handheld one, I gotta go Link's Awakening. It's self-contained. It's got one of the best twists in video game history, where you realize you're on an island that's not actually real, and all the people you're Marin and everything, you know, your one confirmed girlfriend in basically the entire franchise's history. I don't count Rudo. That was a forced marriage. Okay. And Mipha, but we all cry about Mipha, so we don't mention it.
No, yeah. Link was the, he didn't have, that was unacquitted love for sure. Yeah. Mipha.
No, I don't know if I would go that far, but we're not doing this. I'm not going to cry about Mipha. I've already cried a lot. And as we all know, Link was a pimp in Ocarina of Time. This is known. But with Link's Awakening, it was just so good, because it was this journey. It was like, I've got to get out of here, but the moment I win, everyone's gone. And then this was my first Zelda game. I got it on a road trip from my home in Illinois to Disney World. It lasted me the entire time, and I didn't beat it until the Switch version came out, which made me appreciate it even more. And yes, I know I said no Switch games, but this is originally a Game Boy game, so stop it.
Yeah.
But, in either one, it's the same game. It's just a graphical update, okay? It's the same game. But it was just so good, and there were so many Nintendo references in it. There was the Windfish Egg, which was Yoshi's Egg. You had the Chain Chomp. You had an enemy that was basically Kirby. And it was just, Nintendo really had fun making this, and it's really stood up, which is why we got the Switch version. So I have to put Link's Awakening in there. But honorable mention is obviously Oracle of Ages. I really preferred that one over Seasons. And Nehru is awesome. But my third game, obviously, is Ocarina of Time. Honorable mention, Majora's Mask. But Ocarina is just better. I mean, it's got the deeper story. It's got the time travel mechanic. It's got some of the most iconic parts in the entire Zelda franchise, which were later interpreted into the other Zelda games. And the fourth game, not surprisingly, is Twilight Princess. Yes, it wasn't the most visually impressive game. Yes, it wasn't the best Zelda game per se, but it had an incredibly dark and deep story. You said the Wind Waker was creative. I thought Twilight Princess was creative, because it turned Link into a wolf, which I love wolves. My company is Black Magical Productions, so I have a thing with wolves. But turning Link into a wolf, awesome. Making Zelda not a focal point, awesome. Midna, awesome. And there was just so many twists and turns to the storyline that I just really dug it, from how Midna was to Zant to the arrival of Ganon. Your final battle with Ganon was awesome. Yeah. I mean, start off on horseback, then you do the full-on sword duel, and killing him was so satisfying. And then, of course, that heartbreaking ending where Midna basically, you know, is awesome to the nth degree, and then she destroys the mirror so that they never have to worry about the Twilight Realm coming and hurting them again. And I'm like, no! Midna! So, I've got to put Twilight Princess in there because they did, you know, deep stories after that, but I just felt like Twilight Princess was pinnacle storytelling for Zelda, and it gets a lot of appreciation, but because of things like Breath of the Wild, it sometimes gets forgotten. I will not forget. It's the only Twilight that actually matters.
So when you said you were going to pick Oracle of Seasons or Ages, I thought you were going to go that way because they haven't really been experienced before. Like, I like your Link's Awakening choice, but I wouldn't put it on my list because there is already another way to experience it.
Let me put it to you this way. If the Switch port really enhanced my appreciation for the game, and it's really a standalone title where technically Seasons and Ages were supposed to be a three-peat that or a three-parter that would all combine into one great story, but they ran out of money. Shocking. But
it is shocking, actually.
It is. Honestly, I would love if Nintendo teamed back up with Capcom, especially now that Capcom's like starting to make games for the Switch again, and they did a Link's Awakening style remaster for those two titles. Just put them all in one pack, the Oracle's combo pack, and give it to gamers, because I know a lot of people would want to experience these games again. And I did beat them. I remember beating them. It was not easy, but I did beat them, and I would love to play them again. But if we're going for like fresh experiences, yes, I would either put Seasons or Ages or both on there. But if we're talking the true definitive Zelda All-Stars pack, I would have to put Link's Awakening, because honestly, it just had that little bit more of an impact than Oracle or Seasons and Ages did. So that's why.
Oh, Twilight Princess for me too. Good choice, great game. I wouldn't put it in a compilation though, because I think it scratches the same itch that Ocarina scratches. Princess is more of a direct Ocarina sequel to
True, but
and then Majora's Mask, ironically.
I would argue though that while Wind Waker is awesome in its own right, I just don't feel it's in that top collector's thing. And granted, it did inspire its own franchise in a way with Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks, but I don't know, I just like, maybe it's because I just really didn't like those seafaring things, but was it a creative game? Yeah, I'll give you that, but I just felt that, you know, even though Twilight Princess kind of retread on certain grounds, it added enough with like the Twilight Realm and the wolf transformation and Zant being a very powerful villain in his own right, that it meant more. So, but again, that's just how gaming works. We each like different games. So, all right, Will, what's your four pack for Zelda?
Oh man, you pretty much nailed a lot of it all on the head already as it is. But for me, like obviously, like pretty much no brainer titles is gonna be up there. Ocarina of Time is just like pretty much is the pinnacle of Zelda title, even though it has been released so many times on the 3DS. It's just like it is the game that pretty much like improved the Mario 64 formula to what it is now. That would pretty much, as you said, it pretty much influenced the entire gaming industry to make the 3D greedy games as it is now. So yeah, Ocarina of Time is just one of those games you just have to play. Even if you play it many times over, it's just you gotta play it again. It's just that dang good. It's just that definitely you gotta include that in compilation. Another one I'll probably include is I just gotta say Wind Waker is definitely one of the more unique ones, because again, a lot of people did not like it at the beginning, and yet once you really play it and play it, like just really experience it, it's just one of those interesting stories that, yeah, it's not Hyrule. It is not, this is the age of where Link failed and where everything is just...
No, it's not. It's on the stupid timeline, which is the worst. I hate this old timeline so much. It takes place in the one where Link goes to the future and he doesn't go back to the past, so he's not there to, or yeah, he's not there to save the day anymore because he's back in the past.
okay.
I think it's the future timeline.
So you're saying he's got to get back to the past. Watch out!
So yeah, and it's with Wind Waker, it also had that same similar, like, I mean, not as like dark per se, with, like with Twilight Princess, but it also still had that same like underlying sense of like dark undertones. Because again, I still remember like, I still remember the redeaths. Like, you thought the redeaths back in the Ocarina of Time were scary. These redeaths on Wind Waker, it still gives me nightmares. And it's...
If there's such melancholy with Wind Waker, I think that's the word I would use to describe it. It's like, even Ganondorf, it's sad. Like, the world has been flooded out and destroyed, and like, there's just these tiny little islands that are left. It is a reflective game for sure.
Right. I mean, sure, the seafaring thing is not very much of a cup of tea, but again, it's just kind of like that was the main theme for that game. And with it, how Eiji Aonuma described during the time, it's just like, sure, it was definitely not the Zelda game that you liked, but once you experience it, this is the Zelda game through and through. I mean, the Great Deku Tree, Ganondorf, the Tower of the Gods is just like... It pretty much like still had that same spirit. And of course, Tetra is just like an awesome Zelda incarnation. So, like, there's definitely that. And of course, like the Link, your grandma, which best grandma ever. I'll tell you that.
Best grandma ever for sure.
I can think of better. I can think of better.
And of course, like, yeah, just how it was so radically different. It definitely caused some waves, no pun intended, but it was just a Zelda game through and through. So yeah, like, Zelda Wind Waker is definitely one game that people should experience, even though it strayed so far, like, well, not, it didn't really stray far from the Zelda formula, but it just like took a different approach with that formula, is what I'm trying to say. It's different, but it's still that same Zelda game you know and love back of Ocarina of Time. So yeah, like Wind Waker, definitely included in the compilation. And the third one in the compilation, it's really tough to say, because again, there's really nothing much. I mean, I haven't actually played the 3DS games. Like, if I would include one of the 3DS games, I probably would say like, what was the one with Loru? I forgot.
Link Between Worlds. Yeah, that was a good game.
Such.
Yeah, like, unfortunately, I never have actually played the 3DS games. I didn't get the 3DS back afterwards. But I've heard, like, yeah, the Link Between Worlds is like definitely one that interesting entry of, like, again, like that flips of Loru, like having two different kingdoms of like parallel Hyrule. Like, I've heard that thing has been very an interesting take of the Zelda, and of course, like, the Kingdom of Hyrule itself. So, unfortunately, I haven't experienced it myself, but
the most underrated.
Right.
You should. I would definitely recommend getting it.
So, if they remake that game, or, like, yeah, put it on the Switch, then, yeah, I feel like that game would definitely work well, because it is in similar taste of how it was so different, a parallel Hyrule, but with a different prince, a same princess, quote-unquote. It's just... And of course, naturally, the whole paint, like the wall mechanic of just being like, part of the wall and platforming, that thing was like very creative in its own right, but especially when the turn of the time of how using the 3DS technology to help with it. So it was definitely kind of a much more unique entry of it. I mean, sure, you could probably also put in like Majora's Mask, but I feel like Link Between Worlds is definitely one of that game that seems like not many people, even though we have so much 3DS has been sold already, I feel like a lot of more people can definitely appreciate like that the game of Link Between Worlds, just because it's also in the same of being so radically different, but in the way it's just so, it's Zelda, you know, it's Zelda in a sense. So I probably definitely suggest Link Between Worlds. And the fourth game, if I had to choose, yeah, like, I probably was all agree that, like, with Twilight Princess is just like, is that game that it was just so, it was back to the roots of Zelda. It's like, this is what we expected from, like, the next step from Majora's Mask. So yeah, Twilight Princess would definitely be my fourth game if I have to put it there.
Yeah, boom, we win. All right, Tyler, next franchise.
Yeah, next we'll jump into Metroid, and Todd, we'll kick it off with you. I don't know a ton about Metroid, but I still have a compilation to put together. I know you're probably the biggest Metroid guy here.
I have played a majority of the Metroid games, so I probably will only do three for this one, just because if we do four, it's honestly touching on over half the franchise. So the first one's obvious. It's Super Metroid. This is the all-time classic. This was the one that really expanded the franchise into its what we would eventually call Metroidvania. And it has, you know, it's got Ridley, it's got the Mother Brain, it's got your little baby Metroid. It's the thing that was referenced in Other M, which we don't talk about. But it's what many consider the penultimate, or not the penultimate, like one of the pinnacle of the Metroid franchise. And it was, ironically, it took them quite a while to top it because it was just that good. Because there was no Metroid game on the N64. Metroid did not come back outside of the Smash Brothers appearance until the GameCube. So, and the GBA. Which brings me to the dark horse, not black sheep, dark horse of the Metroid franchise, Metroid Fusion. Alright, this was on the GBA. It came out right around, I'm pretty sure it was like the same day release or so as Metroid Prime, because Nintendo really wanted to bring them back, the franchise back. So they brought one to the console and one to the handheld. And Fusion was so good. It was a very different kind of Metroid story because Samus actually gets infected and she has to have a brand new suit to keep her alive. And her old suit is sentient now because video games. And it's a brand new world. It's entirely new areas. And you actually have a deeper backstory. It's actually one of the few times where Samus talks constantly through the game, but it's obviously through text chat. But we learn about her, we learn about Adam, who's obviously a big player in the Metroid lore. It's got some really great bosses, a really great combat, and then by the end you become the one true Samus by getting your old armor back. And it's just a really enjoyable experience from start to finish. It builds upon the lore, it creates some really fun moments, and it's just a blast to play. So I would definitely I would make a 2D remaster if we were to put it into the All-Stars, because obviously it was on the GBA, so the graphics weren't the best, but if we could do it, I think it would just be pure awesomeness. And then obviously the third and final game would be Metroid Other M. I kid. It's actually Metroid Federation Force. I kid harder. Okay, for the record though, Other M was better than Federation Force because at least it actually had Samus! But the one true third title is obviously Metroid Prime. Which I know sounds weird because there's been the Metroid Prime trilogy on a few different systems like the Wii and the Wii U, and technically we're supposed to get it for Switch, but it's been rumored forever, so I don't know if we're actually getting it. So, but Metroid Prime was the one that showed, you know, 3D Samus in the first-person perspective. It was where Retro Studios came to life, almost literally, and they showed that this can be intense, it can be epic. You know, seeing Ridley in 3D was incredible. Doing the screw attack and all the other moves that you're used to, and by seeing in a 2D plane, it would be awesome in the 3D plane. I did not beat the game. In fact, I didn't beat a single Metroid Prime. But I tried. I tried really hard. And that just shows another thing. It was very difficult. It was a difficult game to play. And it inspired a franchise that is still going strong now that we're going to get Metroid Prime 4 in 2030 on the Switch. The same year, by the way, that Final Fantasy VII Part 2 is going to come out. Isn't that right, Will? So, but if we're talking about the pinnacle of Metroid games, it's Super Metroid for really showing what the franchise could be. It was Fusion for bringing a truly amazing title to handheld. Yes, I know there was other ones on handhelds, but this was different. And then, of course, taking it into the true next dimension with Metroid Prime. So there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Will. You're next.
Yeah, for me, unfortunately, my history with Metroid isn't extensive. I only like heard great things since the exposure of like the Metroid Prime series. So, but I'm pretty much in generally similar boat with you, Todd. Like, yeah, the original Super Metroid back on the SNES days, and of course, like the remake. It just, yeah, I still remember back then, like, how the original Super Metroid was just so, like, it was so fresh back when it first came out. And, like, again, of course, first female protagonist, just, like, that space bounty hunter, age of, like, again, Ripley, space of a whole 90s sci-fi genre back when it was booming back then. And just how much it was, pretty much was it in the thing of its time, but it just feels right, it just matches with like the world as it is. So yeah, Super Metroid, and bring it back in a compilation pack for current gamers, I think, yeah, like this is what Samus originally it was, would definitely be a good thing to like show for future generations. So yeah, Super Metroid. The next game, It's really hard to say, and like again, my limited experience with Metroid it makes it very difficult. But yeah, if anything else, like I probably would have to agree that just Metroid Prime is definitely the original Metroid Prime. It's just that one game you definitely have to experience at least once. And sure, the later games improved on the original, but the original Metroid Prime is that game that brought Samus to the 3D realm. And again, just the acting, the environment, just how like it really managed to capture that world of Samus, but in the 3D realm space, voice acting. Jennifer Hale just does an amazing job with Samus Aran. And of course, seeing like Ridley in 3D space, just like that next step from the SNES days we know, and now jumping it to the GameCube era. That was, I feel like that would be like the perfect rendition of like how much that franchise has evolved over the years. And so yeah, Metro Prime for GameCube, put this in the compilation pack. And for the third one, this was kind of an oddball pick, but I feel it does have a place in it. And I'm talking about the 3DS game. Metroid Hunters, if you remember back then. DS. And like there was the first game that actually included multiplayer with other hunters, which
was,
of course, naturally it introduced as well in Metroid Prime 3. It's that thing I probably would, that it was like definitely the more unique and must be more riskier endeavors Nintendo had, because again, like having a Metroid as a multiplayer, which again, that was, there's this during the age of when people were like, let's add multiplayer in all things, and everybody was getting sick of it. But of course, I think this also in same vein as like GoldenEye, to try to put in that multiplayer formula into it. But for some things, I think it actually can work, because again, different hunters, different play styles, is just like, okay, this might work. And like, if I recall, I think it did not too shabby, last I recall, back in the day. So yeah, Metroid Hunters have like a multiplayer Metroid Prime, which is, yeah, really, it's really uncalled for until like the whole debacle with the Federation Force.
Mention that name.
Yes. But again, like unique hunters, unique bounty hunters, different playstyles, aside from Samus Aran, just like really open up the world of Metroid Prime is just, yeah, that I think that is definitely the one more riskier, but I feel much more that more people should more experience. So yeah, Metroid Hunters should be part of that pack as well. So those would be the three, like Super Metroid, Metroid Prime, and Metroid Hunters. I feel like that would be a good pack for the future generations.
All right,
the
Tyler?
Super Metroid, I totally agree with. Of course, Super Metroid, it gotta be in there. But I think you have to have the original in there as well. I believe, which game was, is Samus Returns on 3DS a remake of the original game?
No, that was a remake of the second
that
game.
That too, right? I thought that was a remake.
Zero
of the
Mission
game
was the remake of the original, but then right, with a Zero Suit section.
Right, okay, I thought so. So yeah, I think you need to put the original game in it on the NES or Nintendo Switch Online NES emulator. And it's actually pretty good. I think that game holds up really well. A lot of fun to play, so I'm putting that as well. And then, of course, Metroid Prime. I agree with you guys on that. You need at least one 3D Metroid. And Prime just changed the game on so many levels, and it shot retro to the top of people's, in the public consciousness as one of the great developers. So,
take Prime, their sweet time making game.
Oh, yeah. I just cannot believe still that they went that long without making a game. There's still nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
Like, I guess all they are going to give us is the next Metroid Prime.
Oh, well. All right, but what's your third game?
It's the original Prime and Super Metroid.
Okay. All right, now for the real fun one, Tyler.
Oh, yeah, we have to close it out with Fire Emblem. So.
Boom!
And I believe, Will, you should kick this one off.
And remember, no three houses. That's a modern game.
No three houses.
Right.
No three houses.
You're going to lay this question down on the guy who's a complete noob in Fire Emblem.
Well, yes. That's the thing. I mean, you know of that there are other Fire Emblem games. Which ones do you want to experience for the first time? Part of what makes 3D All-Stars so great is that it gives all these gamers who never experienced games a chance to experience them.
Right. So yeah, speaking as the complete noob of the three of Fire Emblem series, like. One, of course, let's start at the beginning of it all, and of course, naturally, with the original Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon, with Marth, and just the original tale of, like, the pretty much the series that started off. Like, I think that's pretty much the no-brainer, because, again, you gotta know your origin birthrights of the series, because, again, the character of Marth, of course, like, that tale of, like, I still remember that coded conversation with Snake, like, do you remember that? That war makes strange bedfellows, and just telling the tale of how he fought for his land and got betrayed by one of his closest best friends, which is very reminiscent of Snake in itself. Like, okay, that is a story that is, while it's not very new, but it's always a very interesting tale of, like, I trusted you. You were the chosen one and you betrayed me in that sense. Like, yeah, the story of Marth is definitely a tale that more people should experience. I mean, sure, we always see him in Smash Brothers. Of course, we get, like, glimpse of it, but and of course, naturally, the DS remake as well. But I feel like, yeah, one, you should definitely need to know the old story of Marth and, like, how his story was pretty much lays the groundwork for the entire series. So, yeah, I, for me, Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon is definitely the one game you gotta put in Fire Emblem compilation, if anything else. The next game I probably will put in is, yeah, it's not really a no-brainer. It's pretty much a Radiant, Path of Radiance. I was about to say Radiant Dawn, which probably would be the next game. But yeah, Path of Radiance is the game that pretty much brought Ike into that sphere. Just like that character of Ike. Ever since you introduced him to Smash Bros. Because again, I already knew Ike just because from Smash Bros. Like, okay, he's a big, burly power sword user. And like, okay, that matches my type. And like, unfortunately, I wasn't lucky enough to. I didn't have that same interest when the original Path of Radiance came out for the GameCube, so I didn't catch it in time. But yeah, like Path of Radiance, I've only been hearing about, of course, Nate from YouTube, just been like speaking its praises of like how this game is like so unbelievably difficult and arguably one of the most difficult part games in its series. But again, great storyline, the tale of Ike and how of the Grail Mercenaries, how it just came to be is like, yeah, I just kind of want to experience that, like, want to hear why this tale of Ike has been told for so many times over. And of course, like, yeah, I know, like, last I checked on eBay, I think the game itself, a rare copy is like going for $150 or even more than that. So yeah, Path of Radiance is definitely the game you gotta put in a Fire Emblem game, because again, it's Ike. You got Marth, you got Ike. And for the third game, it's really wondering, like, sure, I think the next thing would probably be Awakening would be the sense, because again, that is the game that literally saved the series from being kaput. Sure. So, like, I'm kind of a toss-up between Awakening or, help me out here, guys. What was the game that involved Roy?
Roy was Binding Blade.
Binding Blade, yeah, thank
which
you.
Which was only released in Japan.
Right. So, yeah, Binding Blade, I think that probably would be the next game, because, again, since the introduction ends in Smash Bros. Melee, like, Roy was the next popular character of a sword user. So yeah, Binding Blade, having the tale of Roy be shown off in a compilation pack would be also intriguing as well. And again, Elliewood, Hector, Lin, yeah, that would be also be interesting.
That's a different game.
Oh, that's a different game. Okay, I'm sorry.
Blazing Sword and Binding Blade. And
he's a noob.
Yeah,
excuse me. So yeah, Binding Blade will probably like involved that. But yeah, it's really, it's a toss-up between like either Binding Blade or Awakening, because again, Awakening is that entry that, again, it saved the franchise. It literally sort of saved the franchise because everybody pitched in together. So if they decide to like remake Awakening with the current bells and whistles, like with Three Houses, then heck yeah, I would definitely buy it again. So yeah, for me, it's Shadow Dragon, Path of Radiance, and either between Awakening or Binding Blade.
Tyler, I want to hear yours. I want to go last on this one.
All right. This is where Will's noobness comes into play.
Indeed.
I would say Mystery of the Emblem would be my original one, because, Will, that game is the third Fire Emblem game. pretty much just has the first one in it as like the first half, and then there's a second half that's just the full next story for Marth. So Mystery of the Emblem would be my game. That was Japanese only.
Yeah, that was Japanese
only.
It would
be so
I didn't realize this is an option, okay? Because I mean, like, why not just go full tilt and just bring in Genealogy of the Holy War and 3776, because we've never gotten to play those.
Which brings me to my next pick. Which brings me to my next pick, Genealogy of the Holy War.
Oh, gosh.
And I put Genealogy of the Holy War in there because that's where, again, this goes to the history idea. This is where the children came into play originally, the first time you could have child units. The gameplay is very different here. The maps are huge, and it is quite different from the Fire Emblem that we know today. Fire Emblems that came before it, actually. I think ACS 776 is the only game kind of similar to Genealogy of the Holy War, but I'd love to see that one and get to play that. Then I would agree that Path of Radiance is probably the next choice. No, I would say we should get Sacred Stones. Sacred. I'm going to skip FE7 because, and again, I think if you're making the compilation, FE7 should be there. I'm going to skip it, though, and put Sacred Stones in because it's very different. I like the branching paths. This is where kind of grinding was introduced into the series, being able to mull your resources. I love the cast of characters in that game. It has a robust post-game. Sacred Stones, I would throw in there. Also, I want to represent each era of, I think it's important to get the Game Boy Advance games, at least one Game Boy Advance game in there, because that's how it got brought here to North America for the first time. And then finally, I do think you gotta go Path of Radiance. It pains me to not put Radiant Dawn because Path is phenomenal, but Radiant Dawn takes it to the next level. It completes the story, and it brings a sense of scope that Fire Emblem really didn't have. Three Houses, and I think Radiant Dawn does it better than Three Houses does. Still, Path of Radiance is a quintessential Fire Emblem experience. If you're a North American player, I think this is the one that you should get, even if you have to pay an extra $40 for it compared to buying Blazing Sword on eBay. I think Path of Radiance is probably the best traditional Fire Emblem game out there. It's definitely easy, and the post-game is, or at the post-game game is definitely a little more boring because there's just so many enemies and it takes forever for turns to finish. But I'd have to put it in there with an honorable mention to Awakening. It's 8 years old at this point. It's on the 3DS, so it's a modern enough system. That's why I put Path of Radiance above it. But I think Awakening is also a must play. 10 years from now, I'd knock off Path of Radiance and put on Awakening.
Okay. My turn. Game number one is Fire Emblem 7. Because while Shadow Dragon and its remake that was not well received was the game that helped start the franchise, it was Fire Emblem 7 that really brought things to America. Yes, we definitely got Shadow Dragon, but it was not as well received, and we missed out obviously on a whole bunch of other Fire Emblem games until FE7 came around, which has some of arguably the most iconic characters in the history of Fire Emblem, between Elwood and Hector and Lynn, who Tyler hates. And
I hate Lynn.
You did. You said you hated Lynn.
Lynn's fun. No, I never said I hate Lynn. I like Lynn. I think she's overrated. She's a little boring.
That's the same as hate. Overrating is hate.
That's not at all.
Okay. All right. Anyway, so that game really set a tone for all the Fire Emblem games that were to come to America. And again, it was like the second chance. Like, yes, Awakening saved the game, but it was FE7 that allowed it to at least get a chance once again in America. And
it sold well. FE7 sold really well.
There you go. So if it wasn't for that game selling well, we wouldn't have gotten all the other games in America. And we're still waiting on our Genealogy of the Holy War and 3776 and Mystery of the Emblem remakes, Nintendo. Just saying. Anyway, and so that has to be the first one. Because a lot of people didn't get it. Do you want to know how I got it? I bought it off of the internet in Taiwan.
Really?
No joke. When I was, because my first Fire Emblem game was the game was that I'm going to be talking about a little bit later, and then I realized that there were previous Fire Emblem games on the GBA. So getting Sacred Stones was easy. Getting FE7, not so much. I found it on a site, and it was from Taiwan, and this was before I knew, I fully understood, like, practices of the internet. So for all I know, I probably almost got scammed. And then it got sent to me, it got lost in the mail, and then for some reason, even though the package ended up at my the post office didn't send it to me. It was really weird, but I did get it. And it wasn't even in the cover art box. It was just the cartridge. So I got really lucky, I guess. But yeah, that's how I got the original FE7, and it was great, and I loved it, and it was really good with all the characters and the twists with like Ninian and everything. It was good. It was good times, and I really appreciated it. Which leads me to my second game, which is of course Sacred Stones, because Sacred Stones did things differently, like Tyler alluded to. It had the branching story paths between Ephraim and Erica, and I really liked that because they were both very different characters. They were a very different kind of brother-sister combo than we've seen in other Fire Emblem games, with Ephraim, of course, being the warrior king and Erica being the one who only takes up a sword if necessary. I thought it was a good dynamic. I liked playing both sides of the story and watching them all converge at the end. And one of Tyler's favorite villains, Lion, is in the game. And I'd be lying if I didn't say it was satisfying to kill him. But especially Ephraim's line, which I know Tyler knows by heart, which is, "No, you're not so better good. Than me." Yeah. Yeah, you love that one. But that was good stuff. There was also
stronger than even you, Ephraim.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
I was like, "No, you're not." that's like someone going
you're
up to
still
Jordan.
Still no match.
Yeah. They're, that's like someone going up to Jordan and saying, "I could beat you one-on-one." No, you can't. So,
could have never chosen this path.
Yeah. Anyway, so that has to be number two. It was really good, and a lot of people didn't get to play that from the modern age because of how at the time Fire Emblem was still a lesser Nintendo franchise. The third one is obviously Path of Radiance. There is no if you don't. I'm actually a little ticked that Tyler said in 10 years I'll knock off Path of Radiance. How dare you, sir? That makes it more of a reason to put on Path of Radiance, because by 10 years, a lot of generations won't understand the glory of Ike, alright? Ike is eternal. Ike, in my opinion, is the best lord. We even did a list a long time ago of our favorite lords, and Ike was my number one for very obvious reasons. And while Radiant Dawn did expand things in a good way, and it showed the scale and scope that I do agree with Tyler that, you know, even games like Fire Emblem Three Houses or even Fire Emblem Fates didn't get to show for one reason or another. It also had some key faults, like, you know, inconsistent balancing of the storylines, and of course the biggest error in the history of Fire Emblem, Micaiah, I hate you. You dared to call Thoth the father of Ike's children. How dare you? Or is it the other way around? I don't care. All right, you dare insult the glory of Ike, you stupid Silver Maiden punk. All right, I will never forgive you. I have never liked you. I only use you in Heroes when you give me experience or extra bonus points for the Tempest Trials, or I absolutely have to use you. Yes, you're voiced by Veronica Taylor in Heroes. That's your only saving grace. That is it. All right, but while Radiant Dawn was good, and I am so glad that we got the end of that story, Path of Radiance just set the tone. It was everything. It was an atypical lord. He wasn't even a lord. He was a mercenary. It was an atypical cast of crew because it was a bunch of mercenaries trying to save a princess and get our kingdom back. We met such a great set of characters from Senaki to the kings of the Lagoos. Of course, my favorite villain, Mad King Ashnard, and his four generals, and on their battles. Were good. I would disagree with Will that they were tough. I never had a problem, but that's just your lesson. If you're not gonna win, you gotta get good.
I never played Path of Radiance, so that's the thing. That's why I included in the list.
I know, but you said you referenced a video that said that the guy thought it was one of the hardest in the game. I never had a problem with it, so clearly I am better than that guy. That's why I'm the host. Drink. So, but yes, with the Grail Mercenaries are top tier from nearly top to bottom, and Ike is just so legendary. There's a reason he was put into Smash Brothers, because so many people resonated with him, and I was really sad when I got done with Radiant Dawn, which was not easy. Now, that one I had trouble with, especially the
Radiant Dawn is a lot harder.
Yeah, it was a lot harder, and the Goddess of Shara level, oh my gosh. But it was Radiant Dawn. Sorry, Path of Radiance was my first Fire Emblem game. I saw a preview of it at a local store back when they had game demos, and I was just like, "What is this game, and where can I play? How can I play?" And it's like, "Oh, it's on the GameCube." I'm like, "Okay, Mom, please give me this game," and I've never regretted it. If I still had my Wii set up, which I do not, sadly, I would play Path of Radiance just like every few months, just so I can enjoy it again. Like, I would get this compilation in a heartbeat just so I could continually play on the Switch that I don't have to set up because I can play it in handheld mode. So I am grateful to that. Now, if there was a fourth one, which I thought we were doing three for this one, but whatever, I would actually go a little bit bolder than you two, and I would say Shadows of Valentia. Because
Shadows of Valentia is so
good. It was so good. And I agree, and yes, Awakening saved the franchise, and Fates expanded it to a great degree, and obviously Three Houses is legendary in its own right, but I feel that with Valentia, they pushed things in a level that would help Three Houses grow. Like, we got the animated cutscenes, we got the full voice acting from top to bottom, and obviously we didn't have that in full on Three Houses, but it was still really, really good. But everything, like, and again, that was a side game. Gaiden, its originator, was just a side story to Shadow Dragon. You know, it even has some of the original characters, like the White Wing sisters. But
love Pala.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know which one I like the most, but it doesn't matter. But you know, we had them, but with Shadows of Valentia, it expanded the story. It did it better. We got incredible cutscenes that are both touching and haunting it all at the same time, like Burkut sacrificing his love into the flames and becoming that really sinister spirit, and Marth fighting Celica and killing her, Marth. Or so we think. But like comic books, death is never permanent. And now, actually, Fire Emblem, death is very permanent. But like, there was a lot going on in Shadows of Valentia. Me and Tyler really loved that game because it was just so well built from top to bottom. Even with the gameplay quirks, if you will, of like the dungeon crawling, which was solely
love
a guide.
The dungeon crawling.
Yeah, the dungeon crawling was solely a Gaiden thing, and of course the non weapons triangle. But that was also the birth of the turn wheel. That was the birth of you know, what using weapons as a resource instead of just having them endlessly. And so on and so forth, and there was just so much good, and it sold well enough, but it didn't sell anywhere close to Fates, which is why I feel it should be in this compilation, because it's both a harken back to the original days of Fire Emblem, while also being a bastion of what was to come with Three Houses and whatever comes next, which I really hope we get something next very, very soon. Okay, not very soon, because what was it, 2018? Right? Three Houses?
Yes.
That was 2018. Yeah. So
it was actually 2019. It was actually 2019.
Really?
Yep.
Because it was supposed to be 2018, and then they delayed it. So anyway, they're still hard at work at whatever comes next. But Valentia was just an incredible game, and I actually regret not playing my 3DS anymore because I would love to go back and dive in into that world, especially now that I'm almost done with my Three Houses run. So
I didn't put Valentia in, even though it's my second favorite game, because it came out recently. That was the reason.
Oh, recently enough. Remember, I said no Three Houses. I didn't say anything else. And 3DS is dead. 3DS is dead.
That's just why that's why I didn't put it on there. That's you were certainly a good pick. I like that pick a lot. Otherwise, I would have put it on there. Such a great game.
And to all the other Nintendo franchises, hey, we didn't forget you. We just prefer to talk about these. We could easily do this for every franchise: Donkey Kong, Kirby, Pokemon. I think Pokemon would be really hard given all the generations.
Pokemon would be hard because they're too similar. That's the thing with Pokemon. Yeah. Donkey Kong is like my favorite. But again, there's not enough Donkey Kong games, unfortunately.
Pure Donkey Kong games, because there's like a whole bunch of spinoffs, like Konga. And like, there was some like handheld games that were really like atypical Donkey Kong titles. But anyway, this was fun. Again, great idea, Tyler, to do it like this. And Nintendo, you know what to do. Let's just get it. You want to keep making money, right? You know, keep printing the money. There you go. Let's get some all-star compilations of all these other titles, and we'll buy them up, especially for Fire Emblem and Zelda, and maybe Metroid. We'll see how it is. Can we get a Metroid Prime 4 update? I'm just saying. So, with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
I don't think we had a poll last
we
week.
We did not. We did not have a poll. I want to pose a very potentially probing and problematic poll. Did you see that prose I just did there? And alliteration.
That was good.
Thank you. That's why I'm the host. Drink. So I think we need to answer a question that we've honestly posed since episode one, and it's been continuing on for 200 episodes now. Who is the best host on this podcast? Triforce Todd, Warrior Will, Tellius Tyler, and of course Triforce Todd. So that's right. I'm so nice I get put on the poll twice. So let's settle this once and for all. But I don't really want you to do that.
Why are you scared?
No, I just don't want you guys to be destroyed when I win in a landslide again. No, it's fine. No poll this week. But do let us know what you thought about all of our topics. Again, who would win in a death battle between DK and Bowser? What are your personal feelings on Super Mario Sunshine? And of the franchises we named or the ones we left off, pick your 3 to 4 games per franchise that you would put in an All-Stars collection to get new gamers or gamers who haven't played these in a long time to get caught up and remember why they love these franchises so much. We look forward to hearing your answers. And again, thank you so much for listening to us for 200 episodes. I really don't know how you do it, but hey, thank you. So we look forward to the next couple hundred or however long we do this. So for my dear friends and great hosts, co-hosts, I'm the host, but they're co-hosts. But it still counts. Tellius Tyler, Warrior Will, I am Triforce Todd. And ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We have not out of lives. We have made it to the end of the 200th level. So raise that flag.